This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Rosalie Hunter,
Diane McConnell,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, the subject came up of rural wives, which brings what to mind?
Well, I think long before we became a rural wife, we were a rural daughter.
Okay.
I grew up on a farm in Whanganui in a little area called Brunswick. Hmm. And there was only my dad on the farm. When my brother was old enough to work, he took over the second job with my dad.
What was old enough to work?
Eight, nine.
Yep. Okay.
My brother could then muster sheep. He could learn to help dad in the yards,
yeah.
Do things like that. And when I became that age, it became my turn to learn to do those things.
Okay, and you're talking now about the
late 1940s.
Late 1940s, yeah. Mm. Okay. Mm.
And so if we were available, and if we sat down with a book, we were available.
Okay.
You had to work, you know.
Yeah.
And Dad taught us really well.
Yeah.
He showed you how to do things and... That's showed you how to mob sheep in a yard and showed you how to take them back out to the paddock and all those sort of things.
And you treated that as normal?
I did
because
my brother had done that.
And when you went to school, it was a rural school?
Yes, it was a rural school, little school, 40 pupils, Brunswick
was
the school. Yeah. And we were all rural families, but the difference was that some were dairy farmers and some were sheep farmers.
Ah, yeah. And there was a difference then, obviously, in the work that dairy farmers, the children had to get up early and help with.
I guess some of them did, but it was who had the best cows and who had the best sheep.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Childhood, anomalies about what farming was like.
Okay. But so you had also, when you were working, was that in the on school days before and after school, or just
mostly
at weekends?
After school.
After school. Yep.
Yes, it was my job to milk the cows after school. We only had two cows.
Okay.
But my
mother. So that was all by hand.
Yeah, my mother taught me to milk. She made me a little bucket out of a honey container.
Yes.
And she taught me how to strip the cows at first, and then how to milk them with the proper way, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And
she
you're
using
could,
a two-hand action
Yes.
Okay.
My mother could get froth on the top of her bucket of milk while I got a little bit in my bucket. But it was all a start, how to put a cow in the yard, into the shed.
Okay.
Put a rope round behind it, leg rope it so that it didn't kick you.
Yes, and kick the bucket.
Mm, and if need be, tied the tail out of the road so you didn't get it swished round your head.
Okay,
So we just learned those
things. And there's a real technique to it, is it?
Oh, definitely.
And that's lost now, I suppose, with all the mechanical milking?
We sometimes see it on the farming session where farmers on small farms still hand milk the cow for the house.
Okay, yeah.
But on the whole, it would have become mechanised, really.
Okay.
Bigger farms, more cows.
Yeah. And I'll throw in, because you said, Diane, you grew up on a farm.
Yes, dairy farm.
Yes.
But we also had the pigs
as well.
So you had the cream separated.
Yes.
And then the stuff going down to the pigs, and then there's the bull, and then there were a few sheep, but it was mainly dairy, but it was all sorts of different animals.
Yes.
Nowhere near as specialised as it is now.
No.
But one of the things was we would do stuff on the farm, but it was the community involvement.
Mm.
Remember haymaking?
Yes.
And suddenly, all the locals come and do your hay, and then they move on.
And you all go to the place.
And I was the youngest, so I was often the one with Mum with the food, making the food and taking it out to the haymakers and barley water.
Yes.
And the barley water. They loved it. Mind you, they were working in the hot sun.
Mm.
But a lot of the work, the shearing and haymaking, that seemed to be in the school holidays.
Yes.
And so it's I associated school holidays with quite a lot of those kind of jobs. Yes. Yeah.
Well, the first year Brian and I went to Utawai, we tried to do all the docking ourselves and it just wore us out more than we could ever understand. So we decided we're waiting till the school holidays till our three come home from boarding school. And that changed. Andrew would catch the loose ones that we didn't get in and Lynette would do the marking on the for scabby mouth and Brian would dock and Kath would do the ear.
Mm.
And so you shared the jobs and we always made time to sit down and have smoko.
Yeah.
At the end of doing a pen, and then it would everything would be taken back out to the paddock, and we'd disassemble it, put it all on the trailer. This is your scrim and your gates and the things that you use, and pack it up and take it to the next paddock we were going to do each next day. But having those young arms to help made a big difference.
So why didn't you have the community there when at other times have been? I think you mentioned.
I think Brian just felt we could do it independently.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
He did ask friends to come up from Stanway occasionally, and he'd do a day's docking on his own while I was at work.
Oh, yeah.
But he enjoyed those days having friends to help him too. But I couldn't work a dog.
Oh,
his dogs worked to a whistle.
Yeah.
And I couldn't whistle. And they just walked round the pen going like this with their tail, which annoyed me no end. But we worked our way up.
Mm.
When we got married and came down here to Stanway, Brian was got the job then as the manager. And I can remember getting growled at for going out one day when Brian wasn't well enough to feed out hay. Women don't do that job.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of thought, well, I've always done it at home.
Well, I was thinking that. No, wasn't it if you got a couple on a farm, then the wife would be doing that?
But I remember the manager before us saying, no, you don't do that. So this
was a big station?
No, it was only 800 acres, I guess.
Okay.
And it was flat land, so
easy.
I could put the bales of hay on, but he said to me, that's not your job. So I sort of was a bit careful after that, but once we got the manager's job, Brian and I worked together all the time.
Yeah.
Because it was good for family time.
Yes, okay. So you grew up on a farm and then you were happy to have an adult working life on a farm.
Yes, very.
I'm looking at you, Diane.
No, I went off to training college. And then I taught country kids.
Yes.
And really enjoyed it because I already understood the culture.
Yes.
And then I ended up in town situations.
Was that by... You weren't trying to avoid farms then?
No, I wasn't trying to avoid farms. Okay. It was just how it ended up. And then I...
Okay.
You know, you were saying about the reading. Once again, the advantage of being the fourth, I could get away if I snuck around a corner with a book. I could get away with it. You know, it should almost be unseen at times. But, I think the town life, city life suited me better.
Okay.
I never had the desire to go back and work on the farm, but it's hard work, and it was the isolation too. I think I really enjoyed being around with a lot more people.
Yes. One thing I can remember when we went to Utawai was we had a pot dip in our yards, and that's a big round dip that you filled with water and you put the mix of powder into it to take the lice, stop the fly infestation, all that sort of thing. And the first year we did it, Brian and I started off on our own, and then we thought, no, we better leave it till the children come home. And I remember Brian had asked the children to take the last mob of sheep away, and we just had what we called the odds and sods left. And I said, well, I can dip those. And you had a big hook. I don't know whether you know the big hook that you put on the back of the neck and you shove them under till they're wet.
Yeah.
Well, I stood in my gumboots on the end of the thing, and I pushed this sheep underneath, and then the hook slipped off her, and I went in the dip.
Oh, no.
Up to here. And all I could think is, I've got to keep my mouth shut and keep my head above the water. And I could have really walked on the water. It was so filthy and dirty. And Brian came round and he said, give me your arms, give me your arms. And I'm in the dip with my gumboots and overalls on, and he's standing up on the side. He nearly pulled my arms and other things off. He pulled me up over the edge of the dip.
But you had no problem with police and things for the rest of the year.
And then Andrew came home on the bike and he said, you take Mum home and make sure she has a shower. So I got out of everything, left it on the lawn and went in. And all my skin rolled off when I'd been in the dip. It just peeled skin over me up to here.
But it doesn't harm the sheep because of the fleece.
I really don't know. We hadn't looked at that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the story got around the district very quickly. Well, I wouldn't be suffering from lice. I was sure I've made great fun of. So then we decided we'd seen other people dipping with a dip that the sheep ran through. It was just a little shape like that, and you set it up in your yards.
Almost a tunnel type thing.
Yes. So we set it up in the yards the best way it could work with the yards we had. And Brian brought the pen of sheep up, and he had to virtually push each sheep into it.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd yell at me, keep them up tight. And it was mine, I'm keeping them up tight.
Yeah.
Well, by the end of the day, we were nearly not talking to one another. It was such hard work. And so we decided this wasn't going to work for us.
Mm.
We'd have to think of something else. And so Brian said he could remember somebody using a gorse dip where you had a pump on the back of your tractor and you had the amount of water made up in a big container with the powder or... No, the solution for the dip, and you could spray with a spray gun, and it sprayed quite forcibly. And we'd put 25 sheep in a pen, and I could spray them and do them like that with myself. So Brian was bringing the sheep up, and I could do that bit.
So you don't need sort of total immersion. As long as there's the dip there, it will.
Well,
it would.
You'd spray it until you could see it dripping off underneath them. And it sort of parted the wool. The force of it parted the wool, and you made sure you got it round the head and round the tail end. Those areas, and so that's how we did our dipping for the rest of our time on the farm. And it seemed. We had one in between. Yeah. I don't know whether you ever saw the ad where the young farmer sat on the race, sort of went like this. With a little handgun, as if he was injecting it, and it went, and that was so easy. So we thought we'd try that. Well, I had blisters on my fingers before morning tea time. It was so hard to press that gun, you know, and spray them. And at night, Brian and I went home to tea, and I said, your face is bright red. And he said, so is yours. Well, we just burnt and burnt. In the end, I rang... there was a place in Christchurch you could ring if you had a reaction to farm things.
Yeah.
And they said, wash your face and wash it again and wash it again until you can take the heat out of it. And it just burnt the fumes from the sheep, just burnt our faces.
Yeah. They're talking now about the effects of chemicals on farms, on people's health and children's health.
In the end, we ended up doing it with the spray gun, the gorse gun. That worked well, and Brian and I could do that ourselves.
Okay,
So
how many sheep did you have?
We had 800 and some.
Okay, And was that a standard size sheep farm?
A Romney.
Yeah.
And we had cattle as well, beef cattle. But no, it was hard work.
I could imagine. Because now a lot of that's been more corporatised, isn't it?
The farm we had been bought by another farmer in the district, so he had our extra 600 acres and get to a more financial thing because in the 80s the government removed all the subsidies on the milk, meat,
beef, the SMP, supplementary minimum prices. Mm. Yeah.
And it became so difficult, Brian and I both went back to work.
Yeah.
He travelled down to Fielding every day and worked in a computer shop, and I travelled to Ashurst School.
Okay.
So it was...
Yeah.
Our farming became after school and on weekends, really.
Yeah, which would be quite tight to fit everything in, I
suppose. Very, very hard work.
Yeah. So, because you trained as a teacher, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I came to Palmerston North Teachers College.
Yeah.
Mm. Big... change for a country girl to come to this big place that I didn't know
at all. Bright lights and being wicked nightlife.
The only thing that brought home was when the train came into the station on Sunday night with sheep on it going to Wellington to the works. I could smell that smell.
And you felt it. You appreciated it.
Otherwise, it was a very foreign life for a while.
Okay. So what were the biggest things that stood out for you?
Not knowing anybody.
Hmm.
When I got to Teachers College, it's sort of getting off the subject. College, we were divided up into groups to say whether we wanted to teach the junior or the senior children. And I opted to teach the junior children. And then we were put into alphabetical lots, I guess, for marking the roll.
Mm.
And slowly there were few of the ladies I'd gone to school with were there as well.
Mm.
And you formed your relationships with the people that you did your study with.
Mm. Yeah.
But, to get to the hostel and be put in with a room of four of us and not knowing anybody...
Yeah.
And having a matron who, if we made too much noise, quietened us down.
Yeah.
She didn't like us playing hockey in our bedroom.
Was there a curfew at night then?
Yes, there was.
So you climbed in and out the window? So.
I didn't, but some did.
Yeah.
How did you find it after the freedom of the farm and being responsible from a young age? How did you find it, being in a hostel with a matron and rules?
I guess because I was the youngest in the family and the last one at home, home life became very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to Palmerston, we were all of a similar age, and what one didn't think of to do, another one did. And so you tested the boundaries quite a lot. I came down with my bike that I'd ridden to school for years, like lots of other girls did. And we were just kept busy at Teachers College. You know, we had games for the first or second week. We had children's games to learn how to organise and play.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into our phys ed gear and we had fun. And
okay. So what games were children playing in those days?
Well, you would play ball games where you passed it over your head and between your legs and over your head and between
all
your
in
head.
A line.
Yes.
Yeah, racing.
And then
yeah,
up to pass it to the next one. And, ball schools, hockey schools, all those sort of things, they made games of it, which, being in a school where there was only four in my class...
That's what I was going to say. You wouldn't have... or team games, you'd have the whole school.
School, yes. And if we were trying to play basketball, the boys would kick the ball, so... It wasn't, we didn't get proficient in any sort of games at school, really, I don't think.
Yeah. Did you find then a big difference with the town people at Teachers College? You know,
those who'd gone to intermediate and then to high school and then to Teachers College were very upfront and in your face. Is how I put it. I would sort of still be standing there with my mouth open thinking, am I doing the right thing? But Teachers College just was so involving and such fun.
So you adapted very quickly to
You did learn to. And the fact that I was in a room of four of us, you got to know those girls really well. And we still meet now socially. with those ladies. There was five of us in the end that meet with our husbands, and we all married the boys we met at Teachers College.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's only two of us.
Now, to what extent was that a motive for going to Teachers College?
Well, my father said to me when I was arrived at the hostel, the YWCA, now you watch out for those boys, my girl. Well, I didn't really understand what he said. And the first week in Palmerston, I met Brian. So,
okay.
And there was just something, we just both clicked. We had similar
So was
interests.
He at Teachers College as well?
No, he was an engineer at that stage.
Yeah.
Yes, he was working for Lincoln and Morgan in Rangitiki Street.
Oh, okay,
So there was lots of changes in our life in that year.
I can believe it.
To have, I don't know how well we made our independency, but, you know, I'd never been anywhere without my parents when I came to Palmerston.
Yeah, yeah. So what was the, so then your social life growing up, it would have been sort of community dances and things that you went to, and the parents were involved in that? It was a whole family affair, was it?
Pony Club was formed in the district, and once a year they had a dance. And I can remember the fathers taking wheat bags along, and they grated candles all over the floor. And then a child sat on the wheat bag, and they pulled them round the floor till it was polished.
Okay.
So it was nice for dancing.
Yeah.
And, of course, for us kids it was good. We could skid about the floor and have fun until Mum told us to sit down. But the country dances involved the whole family, from babies being asleep in the supper room to having dances for the adults and having sort of game things for the children. And they were really good.
Because I'd heard of things like the Newbury Hall dances. Where so those were family affairs, not just...
No,
was a different structure.
Yes, that was sort of more adult. Brian spoke of going, and it sounded as if it was all the young farmers in the district, and perhaps some from the army and some from the Air Force, and just farming people.
Yeah.
So a little bit different.
Oh, yeah.
But the ballroom Astoria was where we went.
Oh, okay.
The ballroom. Did you go to the ballroom Astoria?
No, I don't know.
Oh, it was a really beautiful room with a big, big ball in the middle that swung with little mirrors all over it. So you had sparkly bits all over, and you had a dance band at one end, and the other end you had the jazz band. And so when one stopped, the other started.
Non-stop dancing.
And they often had dance, I don't know whether they'd be called professionals, but they would have been people that took part in ballroom dancing competitions.
Yeah.
And they'd come along and they'd put on the display in their beautiful dresses and everything.
But and so you'd all be, they'd teach you specific dances and so on? Or you just pick them up somehow?
No, I had learnt to dance at Brunswick, when we had dances at Brunswick. We started standing on Dad's shoes to dance.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Brunswick was where we had the Pony Club dances and things, so that was your whole family went.
Okay,
So we learnt all these.
So what dances did you learn?
Well, we do the waltz and the foxtrot and the Gay Gordons and those sorts of things, and the spin the bottle. That's where the hall's divided up into four, and they spin the bottle, and the one where the bottle points, you're all out.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Until you get one person left, it wins something.
Oh, okay.
But the ballroom Astoria was much more... I can't think of the right word. Much more organised.
Formal,
yes.
So what, was there a... there was alcohol, or there was a break for tea, coffee and biscuits in the middle, or something at the
tea,
end?
Tea, coffee and biscuits upstairs.
Okay.
And you had sultana cake and wine biscuits.
Okay. And everyone got really dressed up for this?
Yes. Not formal. We just went in our summer dresses because you didn't have a lot of money to have formal things. But when...
And the boys would wear just
slacks polished and a shoes, shirt and a tie. They always wore ties.
Oh, were those the sort of real thin ties? Yes, or
no, no, the no, proper no. tie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
jackets in the winter they would wear.
Okay, yeah.
But we used to have our teachers' college ball there, and that became formal.
Mm.
It was lovely. Mm. See all the girls. I cut the bottom off my bridesmaid's frock for that.
Yeah.
But no, the music was lovely, and we still have one of the musicians come to Smoko, Colin Eglinton.
Oh,
and he could play with the jazz band, or he could play with the formal band, or he could play rock and roll. He was just a marvellous pianist, and he can also play woodwind as well.
Okay. Mm. Hey, there was a lot of that, various musicians. In fact, people would follow different bands around.
Yes,
yes. Yeah.
Oh, no, we thought the Ballroom Astoria was the place to go, even though there was a dance on Friday nights up in the Opera House.
Okay.
At that stage, that was... Mm. sort of opposite where the police station, the old police station was.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there were the country dancers, but we could only afford to go to one a week.
This is part one of three. Listen next week for part two. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.